You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Well, here we are again on the Save the Marriage Podcast. This is Lee Baucom, and I welcome you. If this is the first time, I welcome you to being here. If this is a repeat performance for you, if you've been here many times, thanks for coming back. Thanks for listening. What I've noticed is that once people start listening, they start going back and downloading lots of the old episodes, and I so appreciate your support in that and the kind words I constantly receive from you. It's very helpful to know exactly where you want to head. So today we tackle something that is the most recurring request for information on the podcast, and that's a midlife marriage crisis. And so we're going to be talking about the five steps to a midlife marriage mess and then five steps out of a midlife marriage crisis. The reason we're going to tackle this is because I want to give a little bit more understanding of a midlife crisis before we get to what do you do about it. The reason for that is because of how much misinformation there is. There's even some debate on whether there is such a thing as a midlife crisis. There are some researchers who say there's really no such thing as a midlife crisis. And so let me express a way of thinking about this. Every psychological construct in theory is most difficult to prove that it actually exists. We go all the way back to, let's say, Freud's idea of id, ego, superego. Nobody has ever been able to point out a structure, a piece, a reality to that, and yet it fits our experience. When you read about it, many people say, well, that explains everything to me. And when you start looking for, let's say, some mental health issues, we're describing a group of symptoms that happen. So here's the interesting thing. If there is no such thing, and I put that in quotes, as a midlife marriage crisis, isn't it interesting on how many people find themselves being caught in a crisis that's caused by a crisis in somebody's life that affects their marriage, and that crisis often happens at about halfway through life? So let's just say that there is such a thing as a midlife crisis, even if we can't point to it in any scientific way. And I know that if you're listening to this, you're listening because you've had some experience of that. So a midlife crisis is what happens to somebody when they get to this point of life and they begin to have these experiences. And this point of life is midlife. Right? When they've gone through the period of getting ready and cranked up for life that happens in childhood years and adolescent years and teen years and early years of adulthood, and they're facing that final stretch of life, and it could be a long final stretch, but something begins to well up within them. And that something is that there's got to be more to life than what's going on now. There's a desperation in that. Now, is it guaranteed that everybody is going to have a midlife crisis? Absolutely not. I will say this, though. The only way that people really avoid a midlife crisis is because they are already doing the tasks that keep people stuck. They're already doing the tasks that some people avoid and suddenly feel it accumulate and grow upon them. And so if there are those who don't have a midlife crisis, it's likely because they're already attending to the issues that mount up and become a marriage or a midlife crisis. So let's talk about what those pieces are. There are five pieces that lead to a midlife crisis. These five pieces are accumulative. And so when there's one there, that's an issue. But when they begin to build upon each other, they create a crisis that feels in some ways insurmountable. So let's just talk about these in kind of the order of what happens. Number one is there's a realization of mortality. You know, the thing that we often as humans are capable of doing is pretending as if there's not an end to this life. That life somehow is going to continue on and on and on. And, you know, I love that commercial. There's a commercial where the person gets a note that says, your heart attack is at 5 o'clock today. You know, if we knew exactly when that time was, that our end of life, that would change a lot about our life. You know, if somebody said, hey, you've got 3 months to live, you've got this amount of time, you would get real serious about what life is going to be like. But now we have this ambiguous end time, this ambiguous point when we know it's all going to be over that we have no idea of when that's going to be. I say that having been through a health crisis where I knew that I might have very little time to be healthy and needed to do some things. And so what I talk about is from then on, I'm living in bonus time. When I escaped the time frame of that, then I found myself on this extra time. Time period that I didn't expect to have because of what was going on. And so for me, it became a very pointed place where I could say, you know what, I've only got so much of life left. And now I don't know how long it's going to be, but boy, I'm aware now that there is an end. We all have some point in life when we are suddenly aware of this. Gather a group of people who are at midlife and have them start talking about life and how long they're going to live, and they're going to talk about the death of their parents, or they're going to talk about the death of a friend or someone they knew from school or someone that was close to them at work. There are going to be stories about how they're at that point of life of realizing that people are going to die unexpectedly at times that aren't particularly convenient or, you know, expected, and that creates a bit of a fear in the background of mortality. And so the first thing that happens is that realization of mortality. It can be because somebody got sick, they had a health scare, somebody around them died, but something is going to suddenly bring in the focus that there is an end to this, that there is, as my radiologist friend said, the truth that life is terminal, that once we begin life, it's terminal. It's just a matter of when, how long we have, and how we're going to live it in between. And so that begins to change the structure, because up until that point, we often live as if there's just this goal down the road that we're just trying to get to, that, you know, we're going to keep on working towards this goal. And suddenly we realize that there's an end that might happen before we ever get to the goals. There's something that might stop our progress to get to those goals. So the first thing that happens in a midlife marriage mess is that someone begins to have that sense of mortality. Now, right now, we're talking not just about a midlife crisis, but how it affects the marriage itself, how it begins to infect the marriage, because at that point, there are lots of things that happen. So the first one is a realization of a mortality, that somebody goes, wow, there's only so much more time. The second is that there has been a history of disconnection in the relationship, that they've grown disconnected from each other in the marriage. And the disconnection may have been around maybe three C's, or I'm going to have to use one as I'm going to cheat, but kids, career, and concerns, or we could say children, career, and concerns, but it sounds a little better for me to say kids, career, and concerns. So those are the focus of what happens in the disconnection. Kids come into our lives and we shift the focus from just being the two of us to being the group of us, being the family. And as we spread that awareness around, sometimes the kids get our focus. Sometimes the kids get our time and our attention and our energy, and we stop giving it to our spouse. So the disconnection begins to grow. About that same time, often careers are taking off, that in order to get ahead, we work more hours, and as we work more hours, we become more invested in the career than perhaps we've been invested in the relationship, assuming that we hit pause, and we'll come back to it at another point. As I've said many other times, there is no pause in a relationship. You can't hit pause and come back to it down the road, and yet we live that way. We live as if we can do the kids thing, the career thing, the concerns thing of life, and we'll come back and play it out. So what is the concern thing? The concern things are those daily points, you know, of wanting to maintain contact with friends and wanting to, kind of keep moving forward in life. So joining the clubs and being involved in civic activities and all those other pieces, along with the worries of life. Just the things that occupy our framework. We all have a set of values and a set of how we're going to live our life, how we believe we should allocate our energy and our time. And unfortunately, oftentimes in our priority list, the relationship, while we may voice that it's number one, we don't act as if it's number one. It keeps getting knocked down and down. And so there's the difference between our implicit and our explicit ways we talk about our priorities. The explicit is when if I say to you, what are your priorities, and you name off four priorities in your life, your implicit is, do you really live it that way? Or if I looked at your time in your pocketbook, would it tell me a different story about what your priorities really are? And so the priority of the relationship often falls behind because of the kids, the career, and the concerns of life. And so as that happens, the disconnection begins to be painful, hurtful. And as that disconnection grows, we begin to be a bit resentful. Unfortunately, there's another piece going on at the same time, and that's a fear of true intimacy. The third piece is a fear of true intimacy and yet missing true intimacy. We all have a fear of really letting someone know what's going on inside of us, of really letting someone into our world. And we also fear being in somebody else's world, that can be a very vulnerable place to be. And so we create barriers to that intimacy. And as we create barriers to that intimacy, at the same time, there's a part of us that wants to be known and wants to know. And those two pieces begin to permeate our connection in ways that leave us longing for more and yet fearful of more. Longing for more intimacy and yet fearful of that same intimacy. And so we play both of those at the same time. And that begins to be a tug of war within us, that we want to have this connection, but we fear having the connection. And unfortunately, in a marriage, we often blame the other person, that the reason intimacy is not there is because that other person just won't allow it, or we won't trust him with it, but that somehow we turn it into the other person rather than ourselves, that we miss the fact that we are the ones holding back on the intimacy. So the fear of true intimacy and yet missing true intimacy begins to grow. At the same time, another piece, number four, regret begins to enter into the scene. And regret can come in lots of ways. You regret how you lived early life that now keeps you on a path that you didn't expect. For instance, you maybe went to a college because your parents wanted you to go there, or a course of study because your parents wanted you to be there, or you thought you were supposed to be there, or teachers told you you should, but it never was fulfilling, and yet you continued down the path. Or maybe your spouse did that and continued down the path. And we begin to have regrets. Or maybe it was an old boyfriend, old girlfriend, that we have those moments of regret where we confuse the fact of what could be with a fantasy in our head. And so we have this growing sense of regret. And the thing about regret is it's always a romanticized view of what would be different if we had lived life differently. Regret's never a clear thing. It's a way we torture ourselves and live in the past, but not the real past, the fantasy past, as if there were a different way of doing things. And so we have this regret without ever being able to test to see what would have happened had we gone down another path. But that regret is one of the major pieces of any midlife crisis, and certainly a midlife marriage crisis. Why did I go down that path? Why did I choose that action? Why did I go that way? Why did I make this option? And suddenly we live our lives connected to a past that's not true, and yet we act as if it is. Number five is a lack of meaning and purpose in life, whether it's about career choices or other places, that we have a sense that we don't have a real sense of meaning and purpose. And what we miss early on in life when we're making decisions about how we're going to live our life, we are at a place where we're not aware of how much we humans need a sense of meaning and a sense of purpose in our life. And so we make decisions that then play out the rest of our lives in ways that may not be so meaningful and purposeful after the fun wears off, or after the money wears off, or after a lot of other pieces that attracted us in a certain way wear off. Now, there are lots of ways you might think about that. I had a client that was a doctor, is a doctor, and does great work, and yet realized that the reason that the person was a doctor was not because of something that this person wanted to do, but was an expectation placed upon this person by the family. And so while others from the outside would think, wow, a doctor, able to help people feel better, able to help people recover their health, able to do lots of different things, how meaningful that might be, for this person it wasn't, because it wasn't the right fit. So career can affect whether we feel fulfillment, how we're invested in the world around us, what kind of fulfillment we have there, what kind of meaning and purpose we draw from that. Now, that creates, all of that together, creates an existential angst, a hurt, an inner hurt, a psychic hurt, a psychological pain you can't escape. And it's a relational pain you can't escape because the marriage begins to represent all those things along with the other pieces. Remember how easy it is for us to look outside of ourselves for the painful part rather than within to recognize that we brought that with us. So there are some tasks in a midlife crisis. One is to establish a deeper meaning and purpose and connection in the world. To find ways of nurturing that sense of meaning, of nurturing that sense of purpose, and nurturing that sense of connection with the world, with individuals, and with the world at large. And another task is to move to a new level of maturity, to find our way to the next point of growth in life. And the final task in a midlife crisis is a shift to authenticity, to stop trying to impress, to stop trying to be what we're not, and to live an authentic life that others would look and say, you know what, no matter where I see them, they are that person. I just got back from a mission trip, and one of the phrases that was used over and over with a couple of guys on the trip is that no matter where people saw them, they were the same. Whether it was at work, whether it was on this mission trip or playing in public or other places, that was who they were. Who you saw was who you got. That's living authentically. They were truly themselves, whether they were by themselves or with other people, whatever public setting, it was just who they were. That's authenticity that comes at a point of maturity, that we shift away from our image and what the world thinks to a deeper place of saying, you know what, I am just going to be this person. I'm going to be myself. But many people will find other immature, rather surfacey, inauthentic ways of dealing with the midlife crisis. They might find a new car. Decide to find a new girlfriend or boyfriend, decide to find a new way of dressing or a new hobby or some distraction or a bigger house or some other way externally to keep themselves distracted from those inner tasks. Notice that all of the midlife tasks are internal. They're never external. And so whenever somebody tries to find a solution that's external, it's going to fail them because it doesn't ever deal with that internal part. So why is that? There's one simple reason. They don't know better. We don't know better because a midlife crisis puts you at a new point of development. You haven't done it the other way. You've only led up to this point when it's no longer working. It's a paradigm shift. I talk about this in the Save the Marriage module, that the paradigm shift is when you try to work your paradigm as long as you can, and when it doesn't work, you have to make a quantum leap, a big jump up in growth in order to get to the next level. It's not a gradual growth up. It's a sudden leap. And that's true at every stage in life. As we hit it, we have to make a jump to the next stage, but the midlife crisis point is a huge jump. Because it requires us to move to a place that many of us have no practice, internally dealing with the world, internally dealing with who we're going to be, who we truly are, not who the world wants us to be or who we think the world wants us to be or how we think our reflection should be in the world, but who we truly are on the inside. We have to make that big leap, and it's a huge leap for some people. So they keep trying to find ways to distract themselves as a way of trying to stretch out the old paradigm, that it ain't about them, that there's nothing wrong with them, that it must be something out there, feeling uncomfortable the whole way. And that's when we see the crisis with a marriage. Because when that's true, when we can't get to that inner peace, we keep trying to find something out there in what's closest to us, our spouse. So we blame it on our spouse. We see our spouse as the person in the way of us moving to a higher place, to a better place, to a more comfortable place, when really the shift is an internal shift. That quantum leap, when we come to the brick wall and we have to go up to find a new place. Think of a stair step as being a good model of what happens, truly happens, in our growth throughout life. We keep going the same way, and then we hit the edge. and we have to make a jump up to the next level. And we go as long as we can in that, and we take a big jump up. And so a midlife crisis is one more step up in order to get to a new place. But if you've never been there before, if you've never had that experience, you don't know how to get there. And so when a spouse is in a midlife crisis, they don't know the growth that has to happen. Now, the problem for the spouse is simply this. Each person must navigate their own midlife crisis. You cannot show the way to someone who is not asking what to do. You cannot show the way to somebody who is not ready to see what's going on. So sometimes people will say, should I tell my spouse that they're in a midlife crisis? And my response is no, mainly because it will be ineffective. As much as you think that's going to wake them up and they're going to go, oh, that's what this is. Okay, well, now I can move on. When I have noticed this, what I've noticed is that when people are in a midlife crisis, they don't want to see it as a midlife crisis. They see it as a problem with their reality. They see it as a problem with people around them, of a need for a shift in the world around them, and they're not willing to say it's a need for them to shift. So sometimes I have people come to my office, and you know, we'll talk about for a while, and they'll finally say, I think I'm having a midlife crisis, to which I'll say, congratulations, that's great news, because now you can go to a new place. But what I realize is once that person is ready to say they're having a midlife crisis, they're usually almost all the way through it. They might have a little bit more to go, but often they are at the edge of being done with a midlife crisis. An awareness of a midlife crisis comes at the tail end, not the front end. So telling someone that they're having a midlife crisis rarely works. It rarely shifts them. In fact, sometimes it stalls them out in that process. So what do you do? These are the five steps through a midlife crisis, the tasks of a midlife marriage crisis for the midlife crisis spouse. The first one is to remain calm and patient. Recognize that this is a growth opportunity for your spouse. Recognize that there's something internal going on that might be scaring you, but is absolutely crucial for life to shift for that other person to a better place, for life to become more meaningful and deep and connected. So stay calm and patient. The vast majority of people move through a midlife crisis without major damage, unless someone reacts to the process with their own resistance to that. I'll tell you this, you will not know who you have in a spouse until they're through the crisis. And if they successfully navigate that crisis, and by the way, almost everybody does, they will be more mature, have a depth that hasn't been there before, have a greater capacity for connection and intimacy than they've had before, and will be seeking meaning and purpose in life. But you've got to remember that as the crisis is going on, so you can remain calm and patient and recognize this is a growth opportunity. There's a point when we all see someone that we love who's struggling through something, and we want to jump in and help. And rarely does that work when it's a stage of life growth point. We can't help our teens all the way through life, right? They have to figure out how to flex those muscles. We can't do a lot of the pieces of that of childhood where a child just has to develop on their own, and we can't do it for our spouse when they're in a midlife marriage in a midlife crisis that's leading to a marriage crisis. So the first thing to do is to remain calm and patient and recognize this is maybe the biggest growth opportunity in life to move to an authentic life about meaning, purpose, and connection. And you gotta let it unwind and let them work their way through it. So the second tasks for the midlife crisis spouse is to work on your own midlife task. You may not be in a crisis, but let's face it, meaning, purpose, authenticity, and connection is a pretty good place for anyone to be. There's nothing wrong with those points in life. So work on your own place of meaning and of purpose and of authenticity and connection. First, because you're going to be healthier on the backside. Second, because it's going to keep you from ever having a midlife crisis. And third, because it begins to be contagious. So look for the places where you can have deeper meaning in life. Find some place, some reserve out there that you say, wow, that feeds me. Find some way of being purposeful in the world, of saying, you know what, this is how I want to help the world and leave it in a better place. Usually meaning and purpose find themselves in the same activities. We draw meaning out of purposeful action. And we draw our purpose out of meaningful action. They fit together. So look for what brings meaning and purpose into your life. Look for how you can be more authentic, more loving, more caring, more connected in life. Look for that connection piece. How can you deepen the connection with friends, with family? Find ways of broadening your connection in the world, of recognizing that we're all in this together, that we're all trying to get through life in helpful ways, and say, I'm going to be connected with other people, and I'm going to be authentically connected with other people. And authentic just means that you're going to be true to yourself. An interesting thing happens as we grow older, and that is that we become a bit more eccentric, mainly because we don't care what people think of us as we grow older. My grandmother was one of the most eccentric people in fun, interesting ways. And the reason is because she didn't care what people thought. If she wanted to read interesting books and ask interesting questions, she did that. If she wanted to do different activities and try out different things, she did that because that was her way of being authentic, of not being worried about what other people thought, of just saying, this is who I am. You can love me or not. That's up to you. But I'm going to be true to myself. So work on your own place of authenticity and connection. Those go hand in hand. Meaning and purpose go hand in hand. Authenticity and connection go hand in hand, linked together. Those are the two major tasks. Can I have more meaning and purpose in my life? Can I find more authenticity and connection in my life? So work on your own midlife tasks in order for you to stay ahead of your own midlife crisis. But more than that, when somebody who doesn't know what they're looking for sees somebody doing what they're looking for, it begins to connect on different levels. You don't have to say, look at me, aren't I building a much more meaningful and purposeful life? And wouldn't you like to do the same? You don't have to say, wouldn't you want to be living more authentically and more connected in life? You don't have to do that because the other person doesn't even need to see that or to hear the words to see how you live your life in a way that scratches an itch they didn't even know they had. So you begin to work on your own tasks as a way of helping yourself, helping your own point of midlife growth, but also of becoming an attractor for the other person. So you become more attractive to them because you're doing these tasks that are fitting somewhere within them. But more than that, you're showing them a place of where they can do the same. It begins to be contagious. They begin to say, I've got to do some of that too. Wow, that's something that maybe would help me a bit. And it moves someone away from the surface experience stuff that they do, the crazy little actions they do, the sports cars and all the other pieces, and move to a deeper place. The third task for a midlife crisis spouse is to focus on your spiritual life. And I'm not talking about necessarily your religious life. That might be included. But look at your own inner place of calm and purpose and how you make sense of the world in maybe a philosophical and religious terms, how you just make sense of the deeper meanings of the world itself, not just your own meaning in life, but the world itself. How do you make sense of all of that? Focus on your spiritual life. This has nothing to do with a particular religion. Everybody has a spiritual life. I remember years ago, I had an atheist who came into my office and said, you know, I need to talk about my spiritual life. And I said, well, tell me what that looks like for you, because it's obviously not religion. And she said, no, it's about beauty. It's about the connections of the world and seeing the beauty in the world around me and the amazement of the world and how it fits together. And so we begin to work on that. So that told me at that point, I learned a lesson that spiritual life spans across any religion or even lack of religion, that there's always that place of going, wow, what's my inner life about? What's my inner place of calm and of purpose and meaning in the world? And you work on that. The fourth task of a midlife crisis spouse is to work to build a deeper connection with your spouse. We were already talking about that connection earlier as one of the tasks of midlife. But in this, it's about working on that to build a deeper connection with your spouse, not just with the world at large, but with your spouse. And the fifth task is to grow. Try new things. Keep on developing your life. Look at other interests. Be multidimensional. And as you begin to do that, you begin to see how rich and deep the world is and your experience in the world is. And it doesn't have to be about finding deeper stuff. It doesn't have to be about volunteering or taking trips across the world to help other people or even helping in your own neighborhood, but trying new activities, new hobbies, new experiences, new things that will broaden your horizons and help you understand yourself and your world in different ways. Life is about growing, and it doesn't stop at midlife. Whenever we stop growing, we really are stopping our living. Ray Kroc's quote that I love is, "You are either green and growing or ripe and rotting." Those are the only two choices, green and growing or ripe and rotting. So I'm inviting you to be green and growing, to continue to grow. That makes you multidimensional, much more rich and thick in your experience in the world, and much more resilient for whatever is going on around you. So as you review that, the task of a midlife crisis spouse is to remain calm and patient, to work on your own midlife tasks, to focus on your spiritual life, to work to build a deeper connection with your spouse, and then to grow. When you do that, you begin to see that midlife is an opportunity point. It doesn't have to be a crisis point, it's an opportunity point. But if it becomes a crisis, there are ways to navigate that. You can navigate your own, and you can be a beacon for a spouse who's in the middle of a midlife crisis but doesn't know what they're feeling. Lots of times when somebody's in a midlife crisis, they don't know what's going on other than it hurts and they can't get away from it. The psychological pain is something they want to escape and no way of doing that. Be the beacon to show them the way through that without having to say it. Be that beacon. Don't tell them about it. Be that beacon and let them follow the path that you light the way as you're enriching your life, deepening your life, becoming more meaningful and purposeful, becoming more authentic and connected in the world around you and in your relationship. If you're having a difficult time trying to find a way of navigating that in the relationship, I invite you to grab my system, the Save the Marriage system. You can find that at SaveTheMarriage.com. That will help you find great ways of being more calm, of being more connected, of finding ways of working on both your own life and your relational life. And I invite you to find that at SaveTheMarriage.com. Also, if you find something in this useful, I wish you would tell people about it. I hope you'll do that. There are a couple of easy ways to do that. One is to leave a review at iTunes if that's where you're listening from. You can go to iTunes if you've subscribed to the podcast and simply leave a review on the page for this podcast. It's the Save the Marriage podcast. If you're on Twitter, it's real easy to show us a little Twitter love. Just type into your browser, just SaveTheMarriage.com/love. That's SaveTheMarriage.com/love. That's going to give you a pre-populated tweet with a link to this. Just telling people you love the podcast. You can send it as is or edit it as you wish. But that helps us spread the word so that other people can find ways of not just dealing with a marriage that's in deep crisis, but any relationship, any marriage, and any life, and find some ways through that. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you continue to work on your marriage and on yourself.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.